Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
How are we doing, everybody? Welcome back to the Sean Atwood channel. I'm Ron Swanson. We're here with Alex and Ryan, the founders and the co-founder of Epstein Isn't Dead, right? I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory, right? I mean, it's a cut to the chase title. But before we delve into it all, Alex, Ryan, please introduce yourselves. Let us know a little bit about your work and what we're in store for this evening.
Yeah. Hey, everyone. My name's Ryan Dalton. My background, I started as a lawyer. I joke that I'm a recovering lawyer. And then I ran a human trafficking intelligence company and helped investigators find people that were trafficked using technology. And then after that, I went to the State Department, where I was a federal agent for 5 years investigating human trafficking and then serving on their crisis response and tactical team. And then I met Alex at Rewards for Justice, where he and I were responsible for processing intelligence for the greater intelligence community for reward targets. And then now we've started Closed Horizon together, and our first campaign is Epstein Isn't Dead.
Damn. All right.
Yep. Hey, everybody. Yep. So my background is a little similar. I've been in the intelligence community for the last about 10 years. I started off with Department of Homeland Security. I then went to the FBI, where I was working the counter threat finance problem set. So pretty much finding how terrorists are moving money around the world and then illuminating those networks. Then went to the State Department, which is where I met Ryan. And we worked on the Rewards for Justice program, pretty much intaking all the information, the raw information, translating that into intelligence, and then working with the greater intelligence community to develop those sources and then develop that information further. But super excited to be here.
That's quite a resume, right, for looking at data, analyzing data, and, of course, assessing how human behavior and how humans are acting, right? I mean, that's quite a heavy skill set you have got there. And what was it like when you were talking about this project? What was it that really, what was the moment where you realized there's something not right about this Epstein story?
For me, it was his handwritten escape plan.
Okay.
That was the big one for me. We created a timeline for this and looked at all of the evidence. And some of these you can wash away with prosaic explanations. Oh, it's this mundane thing. But then there were some smoking guns that we just couldn't get past. And so we created into a timeline where people can read through the best evidence that he's alive themselves. And for me, I'll speak for myself on this one, the smoking gun was his escape plan that was found in his cell. So how about you, Alex?
That was a huge one. Also, the medical examiner information, the prostate claim that the and the body double that was stated by the FBI that they did use. Those two for me, and how this really works is that when you look at the evidence as a whole, each one individually you can probably be dismissive about, but when you put it all together, there's a story that's being told, and there's resources that are illuminated. And so maybe it was the totality for me once we actually put it on paper and looked at this and said, this doesn't smell right.
What was your take on, there was a big story about a security guard who had claimed he'd witnessed something, or he'd made a 4chan post, and that had kind of popped up in the news for a wee while, and then, of course, just vanishes. Did you look into that angle as part of your evidence, or was it debunked, what was the take on that?
Yeah, I remember when this happened back in 2019, and it making the rounds then. So what happens is there's a 4chan post about this poster describing anomalous events happening in the Metropolitan Correctional Center. So this person is allegedly inside the correctional center and making observations that weird things are starting to happen. Mm-hmm. And you can still see the 4chan post. It's still up. It might be archived, but it's accessible via the internet. You can go find it. And he makes these claims about Epstein maybe dying. There's this weird unauthorized trip van. There's these protocols that they're having to follow. And this is something like 30 minutes before there's any known, 38 minutes before any news outlet reported it, this 4chan post hits.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's really interesting because it indicates foreknowledge, it indicates like direct access, which is what we at Close Horizon are really interested in, is the best kind of evidence is direct observational evidence. Someone on the inside saw a thing and then now is talking about it. So that's what the 4chan post was, but we had no real idea. I mean, it's 4chan, right? Like you don't know who's posting. You don't know the authenticity of that information. What's interesting is after the files get released, that 4chan post appears in the files where the DOJ issues a subpoena to identify the person who posted that. So it shows that they took it really seriously.
Yeah. And how much weight did you put behind that? Did you feel like that was part of a, because a part of me was wondering if we were going to see a lot of these official employees making statements and then having those employees discredited to discredit their statements to create another wave of psyop to put people off the scent of anything other than the official story, right? So did you feel like they were genuine claims or that they were possibly there to muddy the water?
Yeah, we're always careful about that. This has layers of psyops.
Oh, hell yeah.
Layers of psyops. So one of the things that made it appear authentic was the extent to which the DOJ took it seriously. They issue a subpoena for this guy who's talking about a trip van was coming in who was not normally recorded, right? This was anomalous. This event where this van comes in ostensibly to pick someone up or drop someone off, whatever the purpose of this van is, It makes its comments about it, which if there is a intent to take someone, extract them out of jail, that would be a really big deal. And so the evidence that this was taken seriously by the DOJ before the files were even released brought it to where our threshold was satisfied for including this in the evidence that we supplied. Alex, you have anything to add?
No, that just coupled with the footage, the missing minute, the famous missing minute of footage, and then the images that have been released that people have claimed have been photoshopped. And so you have a vehicle that can be used for extraction. You then have the thing that is monitoring the whole area. The visibility gets cut out. That's an opportunity if it is true. That's a key point.
See, another thing for me is how do you put the most important prisoner, right, that was put in jail that day in a prison where all the cameras were just not working in every part of let's take away the Epstein side. If you're an employee of that prison, okay, if you're a wife of an employee at that prison and you know your partner's off to work in a prison, the camera systems are down. There's an added extra of danger for the employee. Let's forget about the prisoners for a minute. Like, it just seems to me how weaponized has ignorance become against us? Because I feel like we all go, it's the government. They're going to lie. What did you expect? It's the government. And then we get on with our day, boys, right? But when we actually stop for a second and realize what it is we're saying, we're saying we think our government is so incompetent that they have foolishly or fumbled an unaliving of someone, right? And we've just accepted that and moved on with our day. And it seems to me that's kind of crazy that we've normalized that we just assume incompetence on the side of our world leaders, right?
Yeah, this feels like frog in the boiling water for like the death of democracy. I mean, I don't want to be too dramatic, but if we just accept this over and over and over again, we just accept we're being lied to, and then it's about something that really matters. Like if you lie to me about, I don't know, like whether a data center is going to produce, you know, however many metric tons of pollution or whatever, like, okay, like I can't devote my life to that, right? I'm probably being lied to about lots of things. We feel strongly that we can't let this one slide. If you're lying to America about a child trafficker, the most prolific known trafficker in modern history, or maybe ever, uses children as leverage over our politicians, over our institutions, and then lie to us and try to pull a fast one that he got out of that cell alive. That one can't slide.
Mm-mm. Definitely not. And it's, I mean, let's just for a second, we can all agree that the reach of this man, when you've seen the files, it was far beyond. And I mean, there was people talking about time traveling scientists in these files, bro. Like, here's the thing. One thing billionaires don't tend to do is throw a lot of money down the toilet, right? And when we have people talking about this stuff that are at that levels, we have to start wondering what the end game was for an individual like him, right? Obviously, there's a lot of things that have been put in the files and taken out of the files, right? But have you paid attention to the missing timeline of the files that are missing?
You're talking about the gap between 99 and 2002.
I certainly am, Ryan, yes. Nothing suspicious that went on there. Do you see what I'm saying? And if we were to look at, say, I don't know, 9/11, right, as it's a random date, and how official stories are released and then retracted, how events take place and then change, how if the government wants to nip something in the bud and not investigate it, they're not going to, that's fine. But if you, the citizen, want to file for freedom of information or whatever, it takes weeks, months. And by the time that happens, the system has been designed for your drive for answers to be worn down, right? And I feel like 9/11 is a great example of how information is invented for the public, okay? And very interesting, the timeline of the missing files, Ryan. That's all I'm saying, because tell me what you think.
Yeah, there were some guys that basically took all the dates and then the serialization of all the files and matched them up to a historical timeline of when the gap was. And they used, I think, Claude or something like that. They used some local language model to identify where there are gaps. And there's something like 3 million files that are missing between 1999 and like 2001 or 2002 or something like that. It is a substantial amount of information. Huh. What was happening there?
What was happening there? Because if it wasn't as bad as baby jerky, right? Like if they released the baby jerky files, but kept these files back, the only thing that they will protect above the baby jerky people, it's going to be financial, right? It's got to be bankers. This has got to be major financial craziness that they're hiding, or world leaders, or Trump, or something. And we'll get off this, and we'll pivot back to your work in a second. But I'm just interested to hear your take on the sort of the brighter aspect of the files as well.
Yeah. So what's the question?
Well, when it comes to what it is you feel they were hiding in those 3 million files, because if they're going to be giving us the horrible things that happened to the kids and the alleged cannibalism, surely you're keeping your worst secrets held back, right? And if they're giving us this, what is, in your opinion, the scope of the missing files? What do you think it is they're hiding?
Yeah, I think it's, this is one of those things that you have limits of where the information can take you, but you have circumstantial clues. So
circumstantial clues,
investigating information, which Alex and I have done for all of our careers, the best kind of information is direct observational evidence. That's what we seek at Closed Horizon. Sure. There's other ways to get to truth. And one of them is looking at circumstantial evidence. So what do we know? Well, we know that there's this huge canyon between 99 and 2001 or two or whatever. And what happened that year geopolitically, right? 9/11, obviously. But you also had the dot-com crash. And these people speculated about financial futures all the time in these files. They talked about, there's conversations about different kinds of futures and commodities, which were traded as well. So it begs the question, okay, is it 9/11? Is it the dot-com crash? What is happening there that we don't really understand? And is it connected to larger financial plays that were shorting those stocks? We do know that 9/11 had stocks that were shorted for airlines around that time. What else was shorted? Is there information that directly ties financial actors to major geopolitical events that resulted in death, war, and the loss of people's lives? So that's my thought on what Alex thinks. Yeah.
No, I think you completely nailed it. What strikes me about the files is also, one, the percentage of which has been released versus what currently supposedly still exists. Mm-hmm. And then I guess what I struggle with routinely is the redactions and the amount of redactions, but also the volume at which they are. Like, we don't have a good understanding of how many files get dropped, then get pulled back, and then get dropped and pulled back. And I don't think anybody's taking a good pulse on that, because I've looked up files that I've seen maybe 2 months ago that are no longer currently there. Why are they not currently there anymore? Fortunately, we have these people who are working with language models who are have these massive repositories who are retaining this, but why is the volume changing on the official DOJ website? That's a big question I have.
It's so that in 5 to 10 years, we're talking about the conspiracy theory of the Epstein files, right? Because that's a great point. If you release, for argument's sake, 100 files and you start taking away 30, 40 files over time, that's been remembered as 60 files. Did you see what I'm saying? So that's a really interesting point. Now, there was a lady, Joy, in the side chat mentioned something about a prostate. Please talk more about the prostate. Epstein, according to info in the files, had his prostate removed. The corpse in the prison had a prostate, which was mentioned in the autopsy. Was that what you had mentioned earlier, Alex, about the autopsy? It was.
Yeah. So there's an indication in the files that Epstein at one point had his prostate removed. But when they did the official medical examination, the report was that and Ryan, you can refresh me of what the specific language was, but it acknowledged that there was a prostate still there. So why is that discrepancy? From my understanding, a prostate's there or not. And I don't have a medical background, but I would believe that you don't confuse that.
Right. What did they take out instead? Right. So exactly. It makes sense. So from a background in investigating law enforcement, the legal side of stuff, right? What does your spidey sense tell you when we see is it circumstantial evidence that's mentioned in the files? Does that make it circumstantial or possible evidence that he's had his prostate removed? What does that, is that, was that enough for it to bolster? I mean, it was for you, Alex, right? But was there enough for your spidey senses to sort of go off and be like, hmm?
Yeah, I know way more about Jeffrey Epstein's prostate than I ever wanted to know. Like, that's not something that I wanted to be any kind of like qualified expert on, right? I know way more about this dude's prostate than I ever hoped to learn. So here's where the prostate thing is weird. This is a matter of controversy among people that try to understand what happened here. Some people say it's a smoking gun. Other people say, no, this was, you're misreading this out of context. The prostate controversy began when the chief medical examiner produced an autopsy that said that the prostate is diffused and enlarged, indicating the presence of a prostate. There are two records that are held up authoritative for basically disputing this finding, not directly, but through historical evidence. One of them is, there's a deposition where Epstein is speaking to someone and he's answering a whole bunch of questions. But one of the questions that he gets is, you can still have high testosterone and need Viagra if you don't have a prostate. Is that correct? And he answers, correct. Seemingly indicating that he has personal knowledge of what this is like. People who dispute this say, well, he's being asked as the royal you, right? You generally, this is something that could possibly happen. Okay, fair enough. The second piece of information is his LabCorp record. So LabCorp in the United States is a blood work company that a doctor will send blood work requirements for levels they want to check. They'll take the blood or your analysis, and they will return results. At the bottom of one of these, there's this language about what the levels would look like following a radical prostatectomy, which is a medical term for the removal of the prostate. So one of the theories is that he has this prostate removal and is having this follow-on blood work and your analysis performed to see how he's doing, right? And this would match up this deposition. Now, a lot of people will argue that the prostate issue with the LabCorp record is a non-issue because that's just boilerplate terminology if they're performing some kind of prostate analysis, if he's unhealthy, or just standard like boilerplate language. Here's where this is really interesting. If you go into the DOJ's website and search for in the Epstein files the word prostate cancer, it shows up 130 something times. He has colleagues who are sending him medical journals about prostate cancer. He had a health coach that he seemingly gave a lot of money to who got sent him an email saying, thank you so much for everything you've done for me. Here's some things to be excited about for prostate cancer recovery at stage 4. So all throughout the files, you can find this. You can't find this for other types of cancers like you can prostate cancer. It seems almost certain that he had prostate cancer. And we can see clues of that through earlier medical records where he's being evaluated for things that are consistent with what you'd expect for prostate cancer. So for some people, this is very much a smoking gun. And I think that the weight of the evidence points towards that the prostate was not there and the medical examiner wasn't tracking this when performing the autopsy.
Yeah, that's wild. And, you know, it amazes me how terrible they are at this. Like, I'm not going to lie. Like, the 9/11, Epstein, someone in the evil overlord department needs fired for how bad they are at doing this stuff, because also, Kash Patel. Can we talk about Kash Patel for a minute? Because what is going on with this man? Like, I remember him going on the Joe Rogan podcast, and it was the first time I'd ever seen a currently employed leader of the FBI going on a podcast to promote misinformation and educate the public about how, hey, if there was anything in the files to tell you, we would tell you. Like, what was your vibe on the Joe Rogan moment with Kash Patel and his entire part that he's played in all of this?
Yeah, Kash is interesting because he seemed to, before he was in office, be just fired up about this stuff, right? Like, he was telling everybody, he's going on the podcast circuit, we're going to dismantle the deep state, we're going to go after, you know, the Epstein files, all that. Gets in office and then perjures himself. I think it was on the House floor. Certainly perjures himself when he's asked if there's trafficking in the Epstein files, in which case he says, no, I would have investigated it yesterday. It's not there. There's nothing to see here. And then the files come out, and everyone can reflect on this moment and look and clearly see that he lied under oath about this. So people who allege there's no cover up, there's nothing to hide, this is all just, you know, he died in his cell and that's the end of it.
Right.
At minimum, we can see with our own eyes, you can go see this on YouTube, that he's perjured himself under oath about this. So what else was he lying about? To what extent and to how many people was his agenda laundered to?
And just while we're doing this, do you want to take a swing at Pat Bondi? This way we're swinging. Anybody want to drop a YouTube side chat? Everyone wants to drop a Pat Bondi clanger, feel free to do so. But how, that's my question, Ryan. How did this woman sit in the whatever the legal word is, when she was sat in that courtroom, and she's starting to argue about why the survivors haven't been interviewed? And she's denying that Trump ever asked her to remove his name. How does this happen? How do we have these individuals in positions of power like this so grossly mismanage their position and just disappear into the ether? That's what it feels like to me, because it feels like if that's the way it can be done, we're never going to get out of the system, because it's just going to be another individual put in a place to make terrible decisions to then be plucked and thrown to the ether as well, right? I mean, that's what it feels like. I mean, is this a repeating pattern that I'm just picking up on now? What's your take on Pam Bondi and the shenanigans that was that whole era?
This is why the Epstein stuff is kind of scary, because the child trafficking is obviously horrific, right? Truly horrific. But then you dig a layer down and you look at the purpose of the child trafficking. It's to get leverage. This is an blackmail and leverage campaign that was highly successful before the internet. Mm-hmm. And then you have to answer the question, all right, there's leverage on who? I'm not saying, you asked about Pam Bondi specifically, that there's leverage on her, But there is leverage at the institutional level to cover this up. And who runs the institutions but the president? And so we can see evidence of this cover-up both in the leadership of the DOJ and the leadership of the FBI. And from people who make decisions based on the decisions that they're expected of them. So if you were to cover this up, you'd want to get leverage over the person who can control those decisions, the talking points. Bondi was clearly reading talking points on the floor. When she brought up the Dow being over 50,000, someone wrote that down for her and said, you remind them about the economy. It's my guess. I didn't see the sheet. That's my guess. So what I'm afraid of is with the Patels and the Bondis and the Lutniks and the people that are occupying these positions of power, that we're not going to be just handed the truth because the leverage starts at the top. It was effective. It was a highly effective leverage and blackmail campaign.
Okay, I got one more random question, then we're going to pull back to your guys' work. Where the hell, and let's throw Diddy in this as well, right? Where the hell are all the tapes, right? Where are all the Diddy tapes? Where are all the hard drives? Okay, because you know yourself, the FBI has got a part on their website where they take horrific abuse content and they remove all of the horrible stuff, and they'll show you a really weird painting on a wall or a jacket that's very identifiable, and if anyone knows the person that owns this painting or owns this jacket, contact the FBI, and a bunch of cases have been solved that way, right? The files, we've not even managed to get the paperwork handed to us yet. What do you think? I mean, are we just talking about a pile of melted plastic at this point? The tapes, the photos, because Epstein is a product of the VHS era, boys, okay? The VHS era, okay? So there's warehouses full of this stuff, surely, because, I mean, unless there's some poor guy that got outsourced to an office somewhere to digitize the VHS, what has happened to all of this stuff? Why are we not seeing all of the horrific stuff removed and the faces of the individuals who need to be brought to justice being brought to justice?
I'll jump in here.
All right.
I think what you find is that and you've seen this a lot through the Epstein files, is that the government loves to lean on justifications as to why they can't release information. And there's usually two reasons for that. One is in the name of victims and, you know, chasm child, you know, videos, don't want to release that information to the public. The other one is in the interest of national security. That is a blanket justification that can be used sometimes for the protection of intelligence assets, sources. And so my belief is that the justification as to why these videos or all this evidence has not been released is standing behind that justification. Mm-hmm. That is going to be a very challenging thing to get across. And you see, you know, Thomas Massey and Ro Khanna have pushed against this, that you can't just blanket say that, hey, there's national security interest here, we can't release any of this information. But that is going to be a battle of will. And I think that they are waiting for the public to tire out. I think this entire thing is a battle of will that we will feed you, we will continue to feed you misinformation or disinformation, yep. And that will slowly get away from any kind of accountability mechanism that could be used.
Yeah, it's I love, by the way, how you chose the word challenging to describe the process in order to getting that information. That was a choice there, because it's an impossible, it's never going to happen, right? I mean, let's be honest. Like, we've seen the FBI coming out at Diddy's place with the black bags and all of this, and I just wanted to get you guys' take on this, right? So let's take it back to it. Let's talk about some photography, boys, right? Because there's been a lot of photographs of Epstein, there's been photographs of Maxwell, there's been a whole bunch of AI this and AI that. What's your take on it? There's one photograph that's on your website here. Can you take us through any of the imagery that has landed on your desk and has weight behind it?
Yeah, I'll talk through this photo here. So this is the hero image of the best evidence. He isn't dead page on EpsteinIsn'tDead.org. This is a still from a video shot by a YouTuber named Rusty Shackelford, who has had this video since taken down off YouTube, but is up on Rumble. So this video was sourced from a something like 2 hour long drone footage of Epstein Island. So Little St. James, just there south of St. Thomas, flies the drone over and gets a comprehensive picture of everything on the island. And at one point,
I never realized that was the story behind that, Ryan. That is, and what was YouTube? Was it because it was private property in a drone? Was that their shtick?
I have no idea. I don't know why YouTube took it down. I just know that
Why YouTube took it down, Ryan. But we need to. What is the crusty cow shit lining that we're not seeing, right?
What's the stated reason? Right.
Because that is bonkers. Because I never knew the story behind this, and obviously, I imagine two gentlemen in your position have done your research. Okay, I imagine you've done your research, and that's why this image is here, right? Because that is crazy. Like, for a start, if you are anyone on Epstein Island hiring members of staff and any of them happen to look like Epstein, they're getting fired that day. Okay, for a start, they are the first ones fired. Okay, because I mean, that to me is Jeffrey Epstein. Like, I'm like, that's what it looks like to me. Side chat, that looks like Jeffrey Epstein to me. I'm not an expert, but that's very suspicious.
Yeah, the drone flies overhead and sits there for a second. You guys can go watch this and make up your own mind. We invite people to make their own conclusions about all this. We lay out all the evidence. You go decide. You read through all of it. You watch the video. You look at the photos, the best evidence. We realize that there are people who will not agree with us on all points on this. That's fine. But go make your own conclusions. This video is fascinating because someone flew this over. This is post-death. So this is after his alleged death in terms of timing.
Yeah.
So this island is a very safe place if you are, if everyone believes that you're dead, and it's just really nearly impossible to get to.
Yep.
So where he physically was sitting at this particular moment, if this is him, was a pretty safe place to be. If a drone can fly overhead and it's going to point down at these side by sides. You can see this person, maybe Epstein, poking their head out of this side by side. This physically at this moment, on the island where this side-by-side is located, no one would ever find you unless there's a drone there. And there happened to be a drone there at this time. And so this person, Rusty Shackelford, keeps the drone up. And then this is it's a cut of that video that's been basically put through some like enhancing to show like, okay, is this what it claims to be? And you look at the guy there, his mannerisms in the video, the way that he sits, the way that he stands, they look like the mannerisms of Epstein. We can't go as far as to say this is 100% him just because it's the nature of this kind of evidence. But the kind of evidence the humans like that we love is visual evidence. Look at it with your own eyes and form your own conclusion.
I mean, it's pretty damning. Alex,
and he immediately, if I remember correctly on the video, he immediately acknowledges the drone and then retreats back. Maybe people just don't want to be photographed, but I've definitely been around drones where I look up and I see the thing and I'm like, okay, the thing's here. But this was an intentional.
You're on Epstein Island, Alex, right? If for some reason this is just Larry from like the tree cutting company, you're like, oh no, man. I mean, we know it's not Larry, okay? Because we know who this is. If this photo came out, this man here would have been very vocal that he's not Epstein and his name is Steve and he was there to do groundwork or something. Okay, because that would have been nipped in the bud. Think about it, Alex. You would put an end to that if you were just a regular dude, right? You would be like, oh, actually, that was me. I kind of look a bit like Epstein, whatever. But this is pretty damning. And there was somebody in the side chat talking about, do you remember the Maxwell interview where she was in prison and they put the camera about 700 meters? It was like a medieval long table, right? The camera was at one end of the table. She looked like she had a fake nose and a pair of those, you know, those glasses, right? With the fake plastic nose and the mustache. She just ripped the mustache off me. Like, what was your take on that interview first, gentlemen, if you don't mind?
Yeah, I'm not an expert on disguises or whatever, but I watched that interview and I looked at Ghislaine, the person purported to be Ghislaine, and then pictures of her and thought, these are Ryan, not people.
Ryan, I would like you to find me a single picture of Maxwell wearing glasses that aren't sunglasses. And I'll wait, Ryan. I'll wait. Side chat, Google it. Because I went on a little ADHD life on the spectrum moment where I'm like, why is she wearing glasses? Why is she wearing spectacles? Why is she wearing spectacles? And then you Google it and you're like, nah. And then you Google jerky and I'm like, these people aren't eating jerky, right? Not a single piece, not a single slice of pizza, not a single can of grape soda, not a single piece of jerky in the last 30 years have documented anything against these people. A little bit suspicious. That's all I'm saying. A little bit.
Yeah, I'm not convinced that she's actually in federal prison. It'd be really easy to prove. All of this could be disproven. All the things that we're alleging could easily be disproven, right? There's a way to show that Epstein actually died. There's ways to show that that is actually Ghislaine in the prison. The government isn't doing any of this. They're not doing any kind of DNA test on where the body's buried. They're not going into the prison with journalists, independent journalists from places that are not compromised, going in there and sitting down with her and seeing that, okay, this is actually Ghislaine. If they wanted to restore trust in our institutions and our democracy, there is some low-hanging fruit here, super low-hanging fruit that you could easily do that. And instead, it's just silence and cover-ups and more videos like the one that they showed where it looks nothing like her. And so people are losing faith in our institutions.
And I'll add to that. We've seen an increase on, and Palm Beach Pete is the most prevalent one of the man who looks like Jeffrey Epstein in Southern Florida, and then is all hanging out with influencers and posting about it. And then you're seeing more videos of people who look like Epstein. If you were wanting to reintroduce somebody who is allegedly dead back into society, you may run a misinformation campaign on desensitizing the public to people who look like Jeffrey Epstein. And you may do that over a period of time. And so it's something I've been thinking about recently is how many more lookalikes are there going to be? And when will people just be like, oh, another lookalike? But would that be the opportunity to actually enter the public if I was Jeffrey Epstein?
Yeah, I was saying this to Ryan before the show started. If it wasn't for the who's Israeli in charge factor, and this was just one crazy billionaire dude, I would be. If I was Epstein, I would have had 9 body doubles doing all my business for me, and I would have been kicking it back on the island. I would off myself in prison, and then I'd go change my name to Pete and move to the coast. Do you know what I'm saying? But because he was not a lone vigilante, right? He was a bought and paid for pawn. I don't think that's the case. I really don't. But this Palm Beach Pete. Like, what is going on? And what, I mean, you guys have got, like serious backgrounds, right? Like, when was the last time somebody else was unalived and then wads of body doubles just started appearing all around the world and one of them starts going on podcasts? And it just seems so far out there. And then you look at Epstein's narcissism. Do you remember the interview that you had about, I'm going to start my own podcast. We need to get the attention off of the PDF file stuff and all of this stuff. This is the exact sort of thing that Epstein would do if he could get away with it. Pretend to be someone else, stick him in all of our faces. That is his shtick, as far as I'm concerned. Is that the case, though? Probably not. But it's weird. It's really weird, boys. It really is. But again, Alex, when you said the layers of psyops, right? This is probably what we're looking at, right? It's just all the game to them. I mean, that's what it feels like.
Yeah. I mean, and you see Palm Beach Pete monetizing off of this. And you see him, I think recently, maybe in the last couple of weeks, he took a DNA test and he was going to, publish that on a podcast or whatever. I was telling Ryan this, I'd be more interested for him to, if he wants to talk about transparency, I'd be interested to see what his bank account looks like. And if there's any kind of funding, is anybody paying him to do this? Is this just on his own? He's doing this. Was he approached by anybody to do this? Why is he being amplified so much? This is a, however old he is, 60 plus man who is all over Instagram, almost to the point where it feels like the algorithm is benefiting him. And that's an interesting thing to explore.
But isn't it interesting though, in the deep realm of the psyop, that we're creating a fun-loving caricature of Epstein. Like, oh, it's Pete. It's Pete. He's not really Epstein. He's proved it, right? What a wacky, zany guy. Like, we're creating, we're softening the Epstein horror show. That's what it feels like. It feels like we're reconditioning society. I don't quite know what for, but when something's so bad that the president pulls out the dusty shoebox in the White House called UFO evidence, and the whole world goes, nah, just give us the files, mate. And then they threaten to invade Greenland, and that doesn't work. And then they give us the UFO files, and they invade Iran after going into Venezuela. And they're now like, we're going to have to do something to distract from the files, okay? Do you know the only thing that would distract people from the files is aliens landing, giving us cold fusion, the cure for cancer, and fixing the world? Then people might be like, oh, I forgot about the files for half a second, right? Half a second. But it's never going to happen. Like, it's never... This entire system is just set up for short-term distractions, because once it goes into, once the public momentum dies down, and then the people that are left want the answers, we're back into the 9/11 system of having to wait 14 months to get documents sent back, or you filled out the wrong form, right? And this is where we're heading to. 5 years from now, people are going to be talking about the conspiracy of the Epstein files, and it's very concerning. Very concerning.
Yeah, over time, the access to this information will likely degrade. And then what happens in a generation? What happens when the next generation comes up and already knows that our institutions are corrupt? So I come from a generation where I grew up and I thought, like, yeah, you know, America isn't perfect, but it is a shining beacon in the world international order, and we're trying to do good in the world. And the next generation, you have dispelled them of this because of decades of U.S. modern U.S. history and war and a lot of the things that we've done that we have to look at and think, oh, man, maybe we weren't the good guys on this one, right? But this generation that's coming up sees this for what it is. And they see clearly that, yeah, our institutions are corrupt. Yeah, there's problems. Yeah, they're lying to me about everything. And my parents' generation bought everything. If Walter Cronkite was saying it, it was true, right? And look, in two generations, the faith in American institutions has nearly been lost entirely. So what happens when you have people in 20 years that are talking about the Epstein files? Are they gone from the internet? Are they scrubbed? Do they scrub it like they scrub everything else? What happens with that information? I think that people have got to stay on this like a dog on a bone, because it is so much deeper than the horrific things that we see on the surface, even as horrific as trafficking of children and jerky and all those kinds of things we know about. How deep does this rot go? And this is the first time that we've been able to peek behind the curtain for something that was never visible to us before. People speculated about this kind of thing and thought, well, there's this clue and then there's this piece and I could see how these connect. We're well past that. We can see behind the curtain enough to know that there are people controlling the levers against our politicians and our institutions that will eventually destroy our society.
So here's what I'm thinking, right? I've had a lot of talk about UFOs, aliens, all of this stuff. The world seems to be poised on some big disclosure, right? And I've got this weird feeling that society is getting so out of hand and has lost so much faith in our governing bodies that we need to reintroduce a new control factor, right? And it's either going to be a nuke going off and the whole world agreeing that humanity needs to be saved by removing human error from decision-making and we roll in the AI overlords, right? That's one option, right? But then I feel like all this talk about the alien files and all of this is leading up to some new psyop where they're going to use the religious format of control through a higher power that is here for a greater good that we've got to put our faith in. And I feel like we're coming towards some weird shift. And you don't need to give me your take on that. But when it comes to the level in which the government will create a facade to maintain control, do you feel that there's an end to the length they'll go? Or do you think they will do anything to maintain the control and order, even if they've got to continue bombing and doing whatever it is they feel like they're doing to distract from the files to keep everyone in order. It doesn't feel like it's working though, Ryan, but do you get the context of the question?
Yeah, for sure. So there's the files get released in their first initial tranche after there was a lot of pressure to keep them hidden. Even Congress, I think they one time said that they're not going to release them, and they come back and they release them, right? With the Epstein Transparency Act. Since then, what have we seen? We've seen they're willing to give up aliens. There's been a multi-decade cover-up on our legacy UFO programs and what that actually is. Who knows what that actually is? But they're willing to come out and say, hey, we'll give you that. Willing to go to war with Iran. Willing to put pretty much anything out there to distract from this. I think that's very telling. I think that the more that is pushed out there to try to distract from what people really want. And you can see this directly in their interactions on this topic where they're asked a question and then the Dow is brought up. There is constant distractions away from what this really is. And that's why I believe it's so important, because it peeks behind the curtain. It's not just what is most initially self-evident. There are clues to much, much bigger things here, like the 1999 to 2002 file canyon, right? Like there's all these clues of distraction and cover up and concealment. If they're willing to give us kids as, you know, they're eating kids, think about that. They're willing to tell us in the files that they were eating children. Mm-hmm. What are they hiding? What's the worth of those files?
And then hand you aliens and UFOs, Ryan. Okay. Yeah. Like, what are they hiding? Because it's got to be something. I don't even know what they're hiding. Because even if it was one of the banks, what are we going to do? Shout at JP Morgan and be like, you're bad. Oh, like, it's got to be something bad, Ryan. I mean, Alex and Ryan, it really has to be. I mean, I don't know what it is. But anyway, I'm side question again. Let's circle back to your work. Again, I think we've covered the most profound moments for you both, right? But what do you think is the most misconceived? What do you think is the one thing that people are overlooking the most? That's most blatant to people?
Oh, we got to talk about the escape plan.
Okay, let's do it. Let's do it. Take us through it, Ryan.
Can you pull up the website?
Of course.
There's a card that we've labeled the smoking gun. So if you search smoking gun, it's glowing a little bit brighter than the rest.
All right. Well, I'm just scrolling down here, right?
Yeah, it's on the right as you scroll. So when you get
We'll get it. We'll get it. That's not there, right? Yeah, there it is.
Yeah, so if you click view evidence.
Oh, sick. Okay.
This is the smoking gun. This is the single piece of evidence. No one's talking about it. It's not getting any attention. Every news outlet in the world should have this front and center, and it's not. This is a note, one of two notes. The second one, we can scroll down in a second and see. This is one of two notes that were discovered in his cell upon his death on legal paper. So who carries legal paper? Lawyers. He met with his lawyers up to 12 hours a day before his alleged death to reconstruct his will and testament. So his final will and testament put $577 million worth of assets into a trust that made it hard to find these beneficiaries. So it seems most likely that these pieces of legal paper he got from lawyers, and he drew on them either in his cell or with the lawyers. We don't know when or where he did that, but these were recovered as direct pieces of physical evidence from his cell and put into the files. If you're doing a cover-up and you put these into the files, the only reason I could think that this would be left in there is because our institutions are not homogenous. There are good people in the FBI and DOJ who want to see justice done. Right? There are redactions, but if you scroll up to the top, this is evidence of intent. This is the most fascinating piece in the cover-up. So it's hard to read through this because he has horrific handwriting.
Yeah, what is the deal with that?
Yeah,
what? I'm not being funny. Do you know what we should do? We should just check everyone in the world's handwriting, okay? Like, if we just get everyone to write down a sentence, we'll match it pretty quick, Ryan, okay? That's all I'm saying, because this is a train wreck.
It's pretty rough, and there's things that you have to speculate a little bit about, but there's things that are very clear. So let's talk about the one that stood out to me first. Right there in the top middle of the page, underlined multiple times, it says red notice.
Okay.
You know what a red notice is?
No.
A red notice is like a BOLO for Interpol, where they have a fugitive who's gotten out and it goes over to police agencies worldwide. There's a fugitive on the loose.
Okay.
So let's chronologically put this in order here. He is in jail. He's met with his lawyers up to 12 hours a day, and he now is allegedly dead. Why is someone who's about to kill themselves worried about red notices as a fugitive? It doesn't make any sense. So we see a red notice.
Oh, yeah.
We see other considerations that if someone is trying to escape, needs to have figured out. So money being one of them. You see the dollar sign up there in the top right corner.
I don't know if I do. I mean, oh, yeah, I do now. Yeah. I mean, what? This is really triggering. Like, I'm sorry for anyone who has nice handwriting. This is wild, right? You guys earned your money. You earned your money on this one, boys. Thank you for your service on this one. That and the prostate work, Ryan. Thank you for your service, gentlemen.
Yeah. This is fucking wild. Well, this is, I mean, when you are alleging something like this and you stick your neck out there, you damn well better know that it is more likely than not that what you're stating is true. This is the single piece of evidence that gives me the highest confidence that our claim is correct, because it evidences all the pieces of an escape plan. So you have the words blackmail written up there, which is what this is alleged to be, right next to the dollar sign. That,
oh, yep.
Like blackmail. Beneath that, it says guards. So there's consideration of guard activity or whatever that means. There's concern about guards if you're trying to escape. And then there's a bunch of things that you can't read. So I'm going to just point out some of the really obvious one, and the ones that probably to your viewers right now sticks out the most, is this hand drawing of an airport down in the bottom right called Brad. This is Brad International Airport.
I can see that. Yeah, here.
Yeah, so it looks like the buildings, which are longer and shorter, like you'd expect of an airport, and then a tarmac drawn there, and Bradley International Airport being the closest location. Above that, it says either one of two things. It either says jet versus prop or jet U.S. property. So that could either be, is this a jet that's U.S. property, ? Or jet versus prop plane? What kind of conveyance is going to take him away? And then where's he going to go? And so above that, it says Q and SA. It makes me wonder if that's countries, because next to it, it clearly says Nigeria. So Qatar, right. Saudi Arabia. Where is that plane actually going to take him? And then there's other pieces that are kind of mysterious. I think on here it says LSR, which is an aviation term for last stop routes, which are routes that have lighter immigration and customs enforcement because they're the last place that a plane is going to land in a travel route. It says gangsters on there, so I have no idea what that means. I can't even speculate why he'd ride gangsters, unless maybe they have access to money or he's made friends in the criminal world. So this piece of information, forensic analysts have done significant work on this, more than we have. We stand on the shoulders of giants when it comes to this, but no one's talking about this. And here's what's crazy. If you scroll down to the second page, there's this weird note. He seems to be complaining about something. It's not really that interesting. But beneath that, at the bottom, if you flip it upside down, I know you can't see this, but it's just above, there's the very bottom line, two above that, so third line from the bottom. You flip it upside down, it says jail out equals 10, indicating foreknowledge of when he's going to leave the prison. Yeah, so we have the escape plan, and then we have indication of foreknowledge about when he's going to actually get out of jail. He allegedly died August 10th, 2019. Now you tell me why someone who restructures his entire estate makes it difficult to hide the beneficiaries, or makes it difficult to know the beneficiaries, hides the beneficiaries in a trust, which is what trusts can be made for, restructures the will, writes an escape plan, and knows the day that he's going to get out. And tell me that that guy didn't leave that cell alive.
It's kind of wild. Like, also, this is going to sound really stupid. I think it's quite a crucial point. When you said this was legal paper, right? And that he may have got it from his lawyer, right? I think that is very interesting, because that would mean that there's a clear difference between the prison stationery and what his lawyers use, right? Because I feel like lawyer had to do something, right? I mean, it feels like that. Allegedly, okay, legal teams that are watching out there. This picture here, right? This really gives me vibes of the photos of the aftermath of the alleged unaliving, right? We've got like bars on a window, like a prison cell, and what looks like a rudimentary shape of maybe like a, I mean, it does look more like a dead cow than a person, but then you've got this like rope thing here. This is very odd all around here, but this is all very odd, and this is unbelievable. This is an unbelievable piece of evidence.
This is the single most damning piece of evidence. And so you put this into context of all the evidence and read it as in the totality. This is the single piece of evidence that is the most damning. And then you think, okay, all right, Ryan, so why is this left out? This is the escape plan. Why would he leave the escape plan in the cell? And you got to remember who this guy was. He was talking about trafficking and eating children over Gmail. Do you think he cared about what he left behind? He didn't. He, like many other powerful billionaires and human trafficers, have hubris, have a fatal pride. Right? Someone else is going to clean this up. And if they don't clean it up, who cares? It's not his problem to deal with anymore. Someone else is going to sanitize the cell and make this something that is no longer his problem.
I think after the sweetheart deal, his invincibility levels went up quite astronomically. I imagine he felt pretty untouchable, because who does that? Who does that? You know, it's really, this is mad as well. Also, what adult draws a plane this way? Okay, I can just point that out. What 5-year-old draws a plane this way? The Bradley Airport thing is crazy. And that is really interesting. It really, really is.
And it's one thing to draft an escape plan, and as well as an evasion. I read this as an evasion plan. But it's another thing to say, well, does somebody have the resources to actually pull this off? He completely does. He's somebody who has multiple passports. He's somebody that has connections into the Sinaloa cartel, a smuggling network. He's somebody who has connections into intelligence community. He's met with, you know, CIA directors. He clearly is tied in with the Israelis. And so this is somebody who has the resources to actually carry this out. And I think we need to say that to the audience, because this isn't just something like, hey, you know, I would like to do this, or this is how I would do it. This is somebody who has the legitimate means to facilitate this completely.
Yeah.
And we could see evidence of this. So that's not just Alex speculating. If you close this card and scroll up to the first card, we'll show the audience this. So first card is this one. An expired Austrian passport was discovered in his safe after the FBI conducted their search warrant in 2019. So this passport is a passport that was used for actual travel. It's not just some novelty item that he got and put his face on it. He had travel stamps showing exit and entry stamps in this passport underneath his alias. So you could see that under the name up there, it's Robert Marius. That is clearly.
Yeah, I mean, luckily there's nothing suspicious about Austria, right? Nothing shady that takes place there. So we don't have to worry about the passport, right?
So yeah. I mean, depending on who created it. So what we do know is who can create passports? Well, okay, anyone can create a fake passport, and it depends on how good of a job they can do. A fraudulent passport is different than a fake passport because it's using a real book under an alias. That's a fraudulent passport. Who can make those? Well, you could have the country that creates the passport make it. So Austria can make it, and they give this out to through their consular channels to someone they didn't know, unwittingly furnish a fraudulent passport. The other people who could make fraudulent passports are intelligence services.
Yeah. Oh, listen, let me ask you the smoking gun question here, right? Where does your gun, you can just, you don't have to answer if you don't want to, right? But where does the buck lie for this guy? Who was he tapped? I mean, was he a U.S. asset that then became a foreign asset? Was he a foreign, like, what's his, what do you feel, believe his shtick is? Or was he just a greedy boy that was playing everybody, and they all realized, and that's why they faked his unalive. Like, what do you think the story is here?
Yeah, I think that he was manufactured. He wasn't organic. He certainly wasn't who has appeared to be. I think that we all can agree on that. And you look at his origin story. He was a teacher at one of the most prestigious high schools in the United States, the Dalton School. No relation to me.
By the end of tonight on Reddit, you will definitely have connections. Okay, someone will make a loose connect. You'll have bought a coffee near that place 4 years ago, and now you're on Reddit, bro. That's the way it goes.
Yeah, all the Reddit Bureau investigation is going to somehow connect me to. I'm giving a limited hangout or something here.
Right.
Yeah. So he comes through the Dalton School and he gets hired at Bear Stearns. Bear Stearns hires bright people. Dalton, prestigious school, hires bright people. At no point did he give evidence that he fits within either of those categories.
Right.
So what seems more likely is that he was manufactured for a specific purpose and was very successful at a blackmail and leverage scheme that didn't survive the internet. And I think that it's difficult to ascertain the ultimate power structure that he actually works for, but there are clues. And it's either a supranational power structure that is able to get its tentacles into many governments, or it is directly sponsored by a select few of those and also has multinational control. In either case, he appears to be a useful tool in the hands of people who want to achieve certain outcomes in the geopolitical and finance world.
He also likes princesses and princes. Like, I don't quite know what his obsession with global royals was, but this man had an unhealthy relationship with the UK, with the Saudi Arab Emirates, that whole area, Norway, Spain. It just seems a bit bizarre, right? Like, it almost feels like he was trying to make up for something he wasn't, like as if the bloodlines that run the family almost let him know that he'll never be part of their crew, no matter how much he tries or whatever. That to me, because I'm trying to get in his head, right? Because what do you buy the man who's a psychopath who runs the world for Christmas, right? What do you buy the man who has everything? What is Epstein's goals? Epstein's dreams isn't to have an island and kid jerky, right? He's going to have psychopath dreams, okay? And if there's something that he can't obtain, I think he would obsess about it. And when we see all the conspiracies about DNA and things and the royals and bloodlines, I feel like his obsession was trying to become something he knew he could never be. And that was why he was driven so much. But again, I'm just a guy on the internet full of crap. So that's my take on it. But the manufactured side. So do you feel like possibly he was the perfect mix of monster and businessman that he could run this blackmailing party boy? Hey, because he sounds like the fixer, right? He sounds like the fixer, but then you read the files and you realize he's so much more than just a fixer, right? And does all his business tie into just getting these people to the island for leverage and control? At what point did it become more than that? This is what kind of drives my obsessive brain about what was driving him. Do you see what I'm saying? Because I think that's the missing piece for all this.
I think his function changes over time, or could change over time. So he can start off maybe as an intelligence asset, and then maybe he can become, and these are terms within intelligence tradecraft, he can become an operational contact. He can become a witness. He can become an interlocutory, and is just facilitating conversations. And the thing that stuck out to me when Kash Patel said, Jeffrey Epstein is not a source of the FBI. A source has a specific name. And people think that, oh, he clearly wasn't working for the FBI because he's not a source. Well, there's other ways you can work with intelligence services by not being a source. And so I think through time, he could have held multiple types of functions and identities.
Mm-hmm. Because it seems like he would be an asset people would share around rather than there being 12 Epsteins running around in the world. You see what I mean? It's kind of wild.
Yeah, he clearly has access in place to people, but can also facilitate conversations for people.
Right? Bro, beyond, I mean, that is, we're underselling that majorly, right? Because you see the files and it's, he's involved in pretty much everything, right? His medical, there was one report on him funding a psychologist who got parents to agree to let this psychologist go in and play music to the kids when they were having like their needle pricks done after they were birth to see if the sound would soothe them. Is that right, Jeffrey? Is it? Is it I? Is that just out of the goodness of your heart? Is it? Because I hear like MK Ultra mind control. What can we do with sound vibes? And again, that's not what we're talking about. I'm digressing. Let's get back to your evidence, boys, because this is really interesting, the stuff that you have gathered.
I think there is a good point before you move on from that about who he was and his personal interests and his desire for status. This is a really good point. He was always moving within elite circles. So royalty, world leaders, people who are very wealthy, highly connected, influential scientists, researchers. And you can see in the emails his personal interest was involved in all of these things. He was interested in science, time travel, gravity. He was obsessed with these things. Compare that guy to the guy who's running around on boats in Florida with, you know, these like influencer kids and doing podcasts. That is not the same guy, right? That is a psyop. That is a psychological operation to soften was a good word. I think there are multiple objectives for Palm Beach Pete, but you look at the persona and the modus operandi of Epstein as shown in the files from direct access to these sources. And you compare that guy and his interviews and depositions and all of that to what you're seeing on Instagram and TikTok and these reels that are hitting your algorithm for a reason. Those are not the same guy. And what you're getting is these videos of people like looking at it skeptically, like, did you know that they have the same scar or the same tattoo or whatever? I believe that this is contrived and manufactured because it is going to serve ends of the people that actually have the ability to influence the minds of the world around this. And that's really true power. If you can influence the minds of people about Epstein to not care about this or to turn it into entertainment, it is going to take the edge completely off of the real dark parts of this.
Well, listen to what you've just said there, and then let's look at Palm Beach Pete, because 5 years from now, when people say, wasn't there pictures of Epstein or like video footage of Epstein, they'll go, oh no, that was that Palm Beach Pete guy. And then they'll Google Palm Beach Pete and there'll be hundreds and thousands of photos and interviews. And it just, it's almost like they're planting the seeds now that are going to be the layers of tinfoil hat 5 years from now. And I think you nailed that one, Ryan, 100%. It's spot on. And yeah, I mean, I just wonder what his main driving force was. And I think you're right. I think it does change over time. I think with what, because he'll have had moments that he'll have unlocked his achievement and then realize he can achieve more and realize he can achieve more and realize he can achieve more. And the ego on this guy must have been beyond even calculable. Now, listen, let's circle back to your guys' evidence, because again, this stuff is really, really well put together, guys. Really, really, really good job on this.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, we think that there's a lot of pieces in here that by themselves are just data points, but in the totality paints a really interesting picture.
That 100%. I mean, it's the same. Like, it's the age-old story with every one of these government elite conspiratorial conspirifacts, right? Like, how can there be so many that when you put them all together, it becomes undeniable? And it seems to just happen over and over and over. And this is no different. It really isn't. Yeah, you guys got some good stuff here. Do you want me to go to another one, or are you wanting to?
I think one that your audience may find interesting is people who may be more mathematically inclined.
Okay.
If you were, and I have a friend, my friend, Nick McKinley, and he runs an amazing nonprofit that does incredible work for trafficked people called Deliver Fund. Just an incredibly bright guy. And former CIA, super intelligent operator, PJ, has an incredible pedigree. He's very mathematically inclined. I'm not. But what he did is he looked at this information. He said, hey, Ryan, listen, the most interesting thing about all this is the odds of all of these anomalies happening at the same time. So if you take the cameras going out, the guards falling asleep, the way that he allegedly died in that cell via hanging, you take these some number, a sample of these anomalies, and we're going to take the ones that are the most identifiable in the files and in the reporting on this in the Inspector General's report. So the ones that are uncontrovertible, these happen. The cameras fail, there's a missing minute, et cetera. If you take all of these and then you run a statistical model, and what he did, he used a Python script, and we're going to put it on our website where statisticians who are actually PhDs in this stuff can go in and can question our assumptions. If you use a statistical model to look at the likelihood of this, it is equivalent of getting, if you're playing poker, a single suit royal flush dealt on the first hand. It's like one in 79 quadrillion is the odds of this happening. It is astronomical to the point of being effectively impossible. You compound the camera issues, the failures in the Metropolitan Correctional Center, the fact that this is the first suicide in the MCC in 21 years, and it's the most high profile person that's that facility.
That alone is super sus.
Yeah. So you take all these and they have a compounding effect. And what we did is we adjusted for any kind of double counting. So created this rigorous mathematical model, and in the most favorable terms with the most isolated variables and the terms most favorable to the government and the official narrative, you still, if you have just a few variables, it's limited to some number of like one or two or something like that. It's one in 800,000. And again, we'll put this up. People can double check our math. But in the most favorable outcomes, it's like getting hit by lightning. And so each of these pieces of evidence by themselves is interesting, and statistically it is improbable to the point of be almost like you would say impossible. At what point does the odds become so much against your favor that it becomes impossible?
Yeah. And how the hell do we move forward from this with a mindset that we can sleep at night thinking we're never going to let this happen again? Like it feels like we're going to just have this rinsed and repeated, right? Because I don't know about you, but Epstein's girlfriend, daughter, wife, lady, the one that didn't go to jail and inherited everything, someone needs to be questioning her. I've got some questions for that lady, okay, about what she's currently doing. Because it feels very bizarre that Zorro Ranch took so long to even be brought to the table for being searched or investigated the way it should have been. And this young lady walks away with hundreds of millions from Epstein. And Maxwell was reported to have received the same amount as one of Jeffrey's pilots, right? Did you hear about any of this? Did you read any of this? And I can't remember the lady's name. I'm really sorry. The side chat might remind me, but do you know who I'm talking about?
Yeah, we do. The bizarre thing about this that makes it impossible to allege there isn't a cover-up is how many associates have been not investigated, as well as the people who facilitated his crimes for him. You can make the case for, like, you can make the case that the people who are directly involved in getting people to the island and bringing the girls in and harboring them and giving them places to sleep, the people that are not these billionaire associates that we get fixated on because it's like, oh, what about this girlfriend? Or what about this person over here who's, you know, his billionaire buddy? But what about the people who actually were there driving the boats and driving the cars and running the island and being the property manager who had direct visibility into all of these crimes because they helped arrange flights and they helped get people logistically in there? They should be prosecuted under the Mann Act for bringing people across state lines for the purposes of prostitution or bringing them under the sex trafficking statute for harboring. And they have not, to our knowledge. So none of the people that are in the facilitation network have gotten any scrutiny at all and gotten out of this completely scot-free. We have an FBI that was doing its job that would be investigating the entire network, not just the people that were his associates.
Because, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but they arrested Epstein and that was it, right? Like, there's nobody else has been dragged in or been charged with anything other than Epstein over there, right?
Yeah, you can't traffic people to no one.
Right? Right? Uh-huh. That's that. That's a banger, mate. That's that. I'm going to steal that. I'm going to tell you that. I'm going to say that a lot this week. Because it's so true, right? Like, if they were just getting taken from one place to another to an empty field, I'm pretty sure the trauma reduction would be massive, okay? But that's such a good point. And, you know, we've
seen the government's motive. So what is the motive to keep him alive? The motive that the government had is he had to die in that cell. There was no other outcome that was possible. Because if he was in that cell and was allowed to go through criminal proceedings, discovery would have unraveled all of this and the government would have had no control over it. So discovery is inherently an adversarial process where the plaintiff and the defendant surface all of the information about the entire case to either defend or prosecute the person for the crimes that are alleged against them. If Epstein was allowed to go through discovery, it was going to bring out everything. It's going to bring out records and financial logs and flight logs and phone numbers and co-conspirators. All of that would have come out in a very public trial that would have been put in front of the media every day. So the government and the co-conspirators were equally motivated to make sure that there was no criminal discovery. And do you know what stops criminal discovery?
Somebody unaliving themselves in prison?
The death of the defendant.
Right. Yes.
So there's no circumstance that he could have gone through this, because it would have brought out absolutely all of it. And this was before the files came out. So then it would have been pictures and videos and all these things. And then you have a defendant who's actually going through the criminal prosecution process who would be highly motivated to save his own ass. And what does that mean? He narcs on all of the people out there who are involved in this all the way up the chain.
Yeah.
He could not have gone through prosecution proceedings.
So why is Maxwell handled so differently in that context, with that mindset? Why do you feel, but in saying that, I mean, Maxwell's dad was a bit of a character, bit of a suspicious end, boys, right? Like, I mean, it was a bad, if that was a Netflix series and that was the final episode, you'd be like, this was crap. He fell off his boat, did he? Sound. So do you think that we need to ask more questions about that end of things on top of what's going? Do you feel like there's too many people getting away with things because we're so focused on the files and that's important, and we're so focused on Palm Beach Pete and things like this that we're forgetting that there was a whole network of evil here? And apparently one of them is just tucked up in a prison somewhere, refusing to talk.
Yeah, we're not asking questions like, who was his handler? Right? Yeah. What was her relationship to Epstein? I think people ask a fair question. Is she still in jail? This is not something that we're qualified to really comment.
Yeah, of course.
We haven't really dug into that. We're only speaking to what we feel really confident about. Sure. But to your point, I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
But it feels like a black box. The whole Maxwell case is not being talked about, is not being, to y'all's point, the chatter is going somewhere else. Why? Mm-hmm. Is that intentional? Maybe.
And they really got us with these smartphones, man. Like, they really got us with these smartphones and just creating a way to own our attention, control what we're thinking in a way that, I mean, I say this a lot. Look at the iPhone 1, right? It was a phone. I don't even think it had a torch on it. Like, it was text and it had a touch screen, right? And now 17 iterations later, and your bank cards are on there. It's high definition cameras. It's tracking devices. It's all this stuff that we depend on now, but they've slowly groomed in our dependence on it. And
this, our attention span.
Right.
We have been conditioned for the last 20 years, and our attention span is getting gradually smaller. So you look at things like Snapchat and 5 seconds of whatever it is, Reels, TikTok. Like, our attention span is so small that you can weaponize that in cases like this.
I agree. And it's scary, man. Like,
and they're really good at it. So here's the best evidence for how good they are at this. This is the piece that, when I realized this, it It changed my worldview. So in 2019, when he allegedly died in that cell, from the jump, a controversy was created. Here's the controversy. The Office of the Chief Medical Examiner gives an all official finding that he died of hanging in that cell. Mm-hmm. Concurrently, Mark Epstein, his brother, hires an independent medical examiner to review the autopsy and concludes that this little neck in the bone called the hyoid bone appears to have broken in consistency with strangulation. Mm-hmm. So from day one, there's a controversy between the official finding and the unofficial finding. And this is a false choice. So like if I tell my kids, hey, do you guys want to go get steak or sushi for dinner? And they're nine. And so they're going to bicker over it. No, I want steak. I want sushi. Right. And they're going to do the thing that kids do until one of them is right. I don't care. Doesn't matter to me because in either case, dinner is going to be great. This is the false choice that was engineered from day one that I fell for hook, line, and sinker, where all these memes about Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself assumes the conclusion. It assumes that he died in that cell. And so it presented the world with this false choice from a cleverly crafted information operation to choose between the official finding and the unofficial finding. And in the unofficial finding, you're giving the people who question official narratives exactly what they want.
Yeah.
But they're going to question it regardless. Give
it
to
results. The end result on both narratives is the same, and both of them are distracting from him walking out the back door.
That's right. There's more than two choices here. There's not just either or this binary option. The third option is he left the cell alive.
And there are some real, real sociopaths working, coming up with this shit in the government. Like that. I mean, this is somewhere in an office. Someone got a pat on the back for this, boys. Like I just want to say, like somebody got a pat on the back for this, because it's bonkers.
Yeah, and I think that the worldview of most people says no one is that smart, because it means they're smarter than us, and we don't like that feeling. Like no one's that smart, Ryan. No one engineered that, and they don't understand how these intelligence agencies and psychological operations and information operation campaigns work. They deliberately engineer reality to suit their ends, whether it's financial or operational or whatever their mission is. They deliberately engineer reality to have the outcome that they want, and people to make decisions based on the reality that they engineer. This is not conspiratorial. This is well documented. You can read the U.S. government or whatever government does this. It's part of the way that they conduct warfare.
That's wild. And again, when we've got this level of psyop combined with our this conditioning to assume that the government's going to make the wrong decision anyway, it creates this passive system. You know, evil man is caught, evil man goes to jail, evil man is no longer alive, allegedly. Well, now he did it himself. Oh no, it was the government. Oh no, now he's alive. It's a pretty well-oiled machine. It really feels like that. Even though it feels like they're leaving little tidbits behind. I mean, am I the stupid one? I mean, are these tidbits being left because it's easier for us to be arguing over notes that are found than for us all to actually get together and go and get the files pushed out? And that's not me criticizing anyone. It's just the psychology of man, right? Did you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. And at some point you have to ask yourself, what's enough? And I think for us, it came down to establishing proof of life. And we believe sincerely that if he's alive, it's possible that he's died since he left that cell. He wasn't the healthiest guy. We believe he probably had prostate cancer. I don't know that he's alive today. I can tell you he left that cell alive. I'm confident he left that cell alive. If he is alive today, Closed Horizon is seeking proof of life for Epstein. And the way that we are doing that is incentivizing proof of life with a reward. So we have created a reward pool, and it's got $41,000 and almost $41,000 in it. And as people contribute to that reward pool, it incentivizes betrayal. So this is me and Alex's experience in the government. We worked as contractors for the Rewards for Justice program, and they have a great program where they will put out, you know, $5 million for this or that bad guy. And if that bad guy has a criminal network of people who are only loyal to him based on whatever's convenient for them, they're mercenaries, the money's going to win. And so what we've started, we don't have $5 million to put in, but what we've started is a reward pool. And as that reward pool grows and people give to it every day, right? People put into that reward pool, and over years, it will grow into an amount.
Oh, yeah.
That someone will have to make the decision, is that enough? If I come forward as a source and give information that can be confirmed as proof of life for him to get that reward. Mm-hmm. And that's what we've built. And that's what our background is to process that information securely for sources that come to us. So we've done this for thousands of sources that have come to the US government with information. And we have vetted that information, protected the sources, made sure those sources are safe, their information doesn't get out. We take that highly, highly seriously. Mm-hmm. And then process that information, run it down, and see if it's true. And so if someone out there, it's logistically complex to keep someone alive. You have to have gardeners and security and drivers and medical professionals and people that fix your electricity. And so it is very possible that there are people out there in the world right now, if he's alive, that have proof of life and can come forward with that information. And that's what we've built as a reward program for proof of life for Epstein. Mm-hmm.
I tell you what, see, when that pot gets bigger as well, and then TV channels and creators and all kinds of crazy money hungry individuals get wind of that, that'll just start snowballing the search for Epstein again. It really will. I don't know if it'll help or hinder, right? But it'll definitely re-engage the message of, is Epstein alive, for sure. I think that's a great idea, boys, especially from a long play point of view too, because it will just accumulate and it will grow. And, you know, yeah, Alex, sorry, you were going to say something there, bro.
No, this is a proven tradecraft that intelligence services have used. This does work. We just don't know what the number is. And so, to Ryan's point, there's associates that are that could potentially be facilitating all of this. What the gardener's threshold of a reward versus the medical person's threshold for reward, we don't know. But there's a number associated with each person in the network, and we just have to get to that number as fast as possible. And it is a proven method that works, and the government has paid out millions of dollars over the last 20 years doing it.
Yeah. Well, look, we're approaching on that 90-minute mark, boys. Is there anything else you feel like we've not talked about or that you'd like to bring to the table before we sort of wind down and take some questions?
Yeah, I'll just say this, that we've partnered with our friends over at Once American for open source intelligence using agentic AI to have persistent open source intelligence to find proof of life and any signals that could be there on the internet. So we have a human collection, human intelligence via a reward pool, and open source intelligence via our partnership with Once American and Ben Owen, who works over there, great guy and a huge ally in this effort. And we're not giving up. And so if you want to be part of this, if you want to take action, there's two things you can do. One of them is we're calling for a federal Epstein commission, where you can reach out to your congressperson from our website, epsteinisn'tdead.org, email them and ask for a federal commission. And the goal of that is to do the FBI's job, use congressional subpoena authority to get to the bottom of this and prove us wrong. Go prove us wrong. We're willing to be wrong. And if you're mad enough about it like we are, we need help growing the reward pool, right? $1, $5, any amount, it doesn't matter. Every one of them is a signal that people believe in this and they want to grow that reward pool into something that will incentivize betrayal from his inner circle.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea, guys. And I think it's something people can get behind. And listen, if you're somebody that gets a Starbucks every day, just go one day without a Starbucks and throw your change into the Find the Baby Jerky Munching Monster Fund, because that's what we're talking about here. It's an absolute joke, right? That in my country, your country, and around the world, nothing has happened. We've had two arrests, I can't remember, Mandelson and the man formerly known as Prince, pulled in for questioning. That's it. I'm sorry. If the police, right, are investigating something, right, and I email Alex and I say, Alex, can you get me two tickets to the PDF party in Paris? Hey, Alex, if we're seen together, is that too many of us together? And that's sent by Woody Allen, right? Is that not enough grounds to just to have a conversation with them in a legal capacity? Like, or have I missed something here? Because I feel like there's a lot of people in those files that we've seen that should have had at least a conversation where their rights have been read. That's what I feel. I really do. I don't understand how nothing has happened. I almost feel like Epstein is being used as a distraction now, away from the other 2,000 people that facilitated. I mean, I'm pretty sure you guys have already said this. And it, anyway, I'm stimming out now at the end of this. So yeah. Anyway, if you've never had an interview, gentlemen, by someone who's neurodiverse, you can tick off your list now. It's called, it's a slog, and I appreciate you being here. But I, honestly, I think we should get you back again in a couple of months and see where we're at with all this, because this is definitely a check-in with you boys throughout the year, because this is wild. And you guys have got such good credentials for doing this. Do you know what I mean? It's not like you're freaking Discord mods or Reddit freaking admin. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, you have got the serious knowledge on how to assess this and go, this is meaningful, and present it. And I think that is just as important as the work you're doing, because it would be so easy to write off two guys from the internet that are just being presented to people, right?
And absolutely. And what you don't see here with just me and Alex is we have a large network of people that have stepped up and said, hey man, we're about this. Yeah. And this is among the people who are in his sphere of influence. This is not a fringe belief that he's still alive. The locals of US Virgin Islands, the victims, the people that went to high school with him, this is not a fringe belief there. This is something that carries a lot of weight amongst people who have somehow been within his sphere of influence. And we have a lot of people that have come forward and said, hey, we're going to support you guys. Our partnership with Once American is a great example of this. There's a lot more people. And we process this tip information that people send to us off-site. So Alex and I don't have access to these computers. We have people that are processing this information as analysts. So I don't need Epstein's associate coming to my house with a sledgehammer hitting my kneecaps, right? This is we don't have physical custody of these devices. We always like to say that because it shows how much we take source security very seriously. Mm-hmm. That there's layers to our collection operation here. And we want to make sure that if you have information and you have knowledge about the proof of life for Epstein, that it's going to be taken seriously and it's going to be protected at all costs.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point to make, because you hear it all the time from people. Oh, well, why didn't the people around him come forward at the time? Why didn't the survivors come forward at the time? Like, it blows my mind that people think that this would just be a walk in the, oh, well, why? Surely somebody could have just walked into a police station and reported this man. It's mind-boggling how naive the impression in some people's minds can be of the power, the reach, and the evil that these people are capable of. And I often say, you know, it's often not follow the money. It's ask yourself, are the people involved who you wouldn't expect to be involved with a man like this, do they love their wife and children? Okay. Because that's a much better control. It's much easier to say, Ryan, just, you're going to work with us because, you know, here's a picture of your kids coming out of school, right? Than for me to send you a check. You know, there's a lot more ways to skin a cat. And I think a lot of people miss this when it comes to just the true evils of the world. I really do.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, listen,
you can't be too mad about this. You can't be too mad about this. And you can't become complacent and forget about this. There's deep rooted corruption here and there's evil acts, and to turn to entertainment is a horrible thing. And so people just need to continue staying frustrated.
I agree. And listen, Alex, Ryan, great conversation. Thank you so much for being here, guys. I really can't thank you enough. Epsteinisn'tdead.org. I'll make sure the link is added now. And it will be there for when this is refreshed. And it's been getting spammed and everything like that throughout the show. But I just want to say thank you so much for the work you're doing. And I can't wait to check in with you in the future. I really can.
Yeah, absolutely. This was a real joy. We really enjoyed being here and having this conversation with you. Thank you for caring about this. People want to be involved, they can check out our campaign site, epsteinisn'tdead.org. Or if you have your own question that you want answers to and want to create your own reward pool, you can do it at closedhorizon.com.
Awesome. Well, listen, boys, thank you so much. Thank you to the mods. Thank you to the admins. Thank you to the Sean Atwood channel. We'll see you guys next time. And from me, Ron Swanson, as always, be safe out there, guys.